From KUAZ News in Tucson, I'm Julie Burock, and this is Arizona Spotlight. The U.S. Senate has begun debates of several immigration bills. Christopher Conover talks with Governor Jenna Napolitano about federal immigration law and the state budget. A report on this week's sale of Biosphere 2. We'll talk with local author Laura Fitzgerald about her new book, Veil of Roses, and a commentary from columnist Tom Danahy with the Tucson Weekly. This is Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. Governor Jenna Napolitano is keeping a close eye on immigration reform proposals moving through Congress. That was just one of the topics she spoke about with reporter Christopher Conover.
On Wednesday night, hundreds of people gathered at the Fox Theater downtown for the Tucson Regional Town Hall Part 2. Governor Jenna Napolitano was a keynote speaker at the group's first meeting last month and says now the town hall process is a good one.
For a region like Tucson, a town hall process is valuable because it helps people get engaged in the community and in a substantive way. And one thing I encouraged when I spoke with the first town hall was they need to have more of them and expand the area of reach, because people are looking for a way to feel like they're building a community and they're part of that building. And the town hall process is a way to do that.
Meanwhile, back at the Capitol in Phoenix, the heat is rising both inside and outside the seat of state government as legislative leaders try and hammer out a budget compromise. The Senate passed a bipartisan plan weeks ago that the governor said she was ready to sign off on.
The Senate budget represented a legitimate compromise. Both sides gave up a lot to get there, but it's a budget that allows us to move forward in Arizona in a good way. It continues the tax cuts of last year. It doesn't provide for any rollovers or any of those kinds of things that people found objectionable. Yet it has the additional money for the universities, for teacher pay, and other areas that I sought additional investment in.
One of the big sticking points, according to legislative insiders, is education funding, and Governor Napolitano is hoping that the results of a new statewide teachers survey will help guide the budget process.
Teachers pretty much know the salary issue before they go into teaching. That's not a surprise. I think what some find a surprise is the lack of overall support for professional development, career enrichment, you know, lifelong learning for teachers, opportunity for adult interaction during the day as opposed to with those 25 or 30 kids who are looking at you saying, you know, feed me, feed me. So it's that sense that I think we can work on, as well as the pay issues, that really will help us keep those valuable teachers in the classroom.
Compared to a year ago, there's less money available for state lawmakers to work with as they craft the House and Senate spending proposals. One drain on the state budget is the housing of illegal immigrants in Arizona jails. The federal government, under a program called SCAP, is supposed to reimburse the state for those costs. But so far, Washington has not come up with the money.
Our bill to the federal government for unpaid incarceration costs at the state level is well over $300 million. Well, with over $300 million, we could pay for almost two full years of all-day kindergarten for all Arizona children. So this is money that's being sucked out of our treasury that we're having to pay and being underwritten by taxpayers who are paying state taxes and their federal taxes, too, that we're not getting back, and we ought to, and we're legally entitled to it.
As illegal immigration has increased over the years, the governor has sent numerous letters and invoices to the federal government trying to get that money, all to no avail. Arizona, however, is not alone in trying to pressure Washington to come up with the required SCAP funding. Other border state governors are also pushing the federal government for the reimbursements, and Governor Napolitano says she's not giving up.
I don't know if they'll answer it with a check, but it's a great time to get it in there because it is part of the border security that the Congress needs to consider in conjunction with this immigration bill. You know, at some point there needs to be appropriations associated with this. This is where you actually put the money behind it. And that's not just for a few more miles of fence or a few more Border Patrol agents. It's really also to reimburse the states for the cost of the broken border that's come before. So my view is I'm going to keep knocking on doors. My knuckles may be bleeding and I may not see my return mailbox full, but I'm going to keep fighting for it.
Funding is not the governor's only border concern. She's also worried about the loss of Border Patrol agents to private federal contractors who are using the agents to train border guards in Iraq.
The State Department has hired this private company called DynCorp. They've come into places like Tucson. They said, we will pay you, Border Patrol agent who has 4 years of experience, $130,000 plus a $25,000 signing bonus to go to Iraq. Leave your post in Arizona and go to Iraq to train border agents there. Well, several problems with this. One is, if that's what a Border Patrol agent is worth, that's what they're worth here too. You know, so the disconnect to me is pretty palpable.
The Border Patrol agent issue is also getting the attention of other border state governors and is sure to be a topic of discussion when the Western governors sit down for their annual summer meeting. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Christopher Conover.
To hear more of the interview with the governor, visit KUAZ.org. A local home developer has announced that it will purchase Biosphere 2 and the adjacent 1,650 acres for a total of $50 million. But it's still a possibility that the University of Arizona will take over the mini-world. The $50 million purchase by CDO Ranching and Developing LP was announced on Monday. That's only a quarter of the $200 million it cost to construct the biosphere. CDO Ranching and Developing already has plans approved to build 1,500 new homes and a resort hotel on the property, but there's still hope that the University of Arizona will maintain Biosphere 2 as a laboratory.
It's truly an extraordinary facility.
Joaquin Ruiz is the dean of the College of Science at the university. When the facility was under contract by a local developer last year, the university was negotiating to acquire the Biosphere 2 as part of the sale. That contract fell through, but the university continued to negotiate, and they hope to lease the terrarium. He says the university has conducted a lot of large-scale research, and the Biosphere would give researchers a chance to do even more.
The biosphere affords us the opportunity to do that kind of large-scale research in the environmental sciences, which are so important now with global climate change. The scale of the biosphere is one in which we can do experiments about the fate of water that cannot be done anywhere else, for example, as climate changes.
Biosphere 2 gained global attention in 1991 when 8 people were sealed inside. They spent 2 years conducting an experiment in self-sufficiency. In 1996, Columbia University began managing the facility as a research laboratory. Jane Pointer was one of the 8 biospherians. She says Columbia University made some major discoveries.
One of the scariest things that Columbia discovered was in the ocean. What they found out is it takes very little elevated CO2 in the atmosphere over the ocean to change the chemistry of the ocean itself to the point where you really stop corals from growing. And when you do that, you're not just affecting the corals. You're affecting many of the small organisms in the ocean that rely on that same chemistry to make their bodies. And those same animals at the bottom of the food web and could ultimately really have an effect on our food supply.
Columbia University ended their involvement in 2003, but Pointer believes Biosphere 2 can still be a great research facility, and she hopes the University of Arizona will be able to take it over.
The kind of research we've done in Biosphere 2 are studies with elevated CO2, the kinds of things that you'd want to do if you were researching climate change and global warming.
Dean Joaquin Ruiz hopes the U of A and the new owners can come to agreement sooner than later.
We are negotiating hard with the new owners of the biosphere to see if there's an opportunity for us to be engaged in that facility.
The new owners say Biosphere 2 will remain open to visitors and tours. Up next on Arizona Spotlight, an interview with local author Laura Fitzgerald about her new book, Veil of Roses. This is Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. A book published in January called Veil of Roses takes a look at America through the eyes of a young Iranian immigrant woman uneasy with embracing freedom. It takes place here in Tucson and was written by local author Laura Fitzgerald. She joins me now in our studios to talk about the book. Laura, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me a little bit about the book. What was your approach in writing it and the plot of the book?
The story is the story of a woman who is 27 years old, and she's from Iran. Her parents had lived in the United States before the revolution of 1979, and they went back for an extended visit, and they then got stuck and were unable to leave. Their whole life, all they wanted was for their girls to come to America and be raised in America and in the freedom. And so for her 27th birthday, the main character, whose name is Tamila, receives a visa and a ticket to America. Her sister already lives here, and she has 3 months in which to find a way to stay, because her parents, basically they tell her, we love you, but we don't want you coming back. You've got to find a way to stay and make a life for yourself there. And so she comes on this quest to America, looking for freedom, but also knowing that she's giving up her family and her homeland forever.
Freedom is a big theme in the book, specifically the freedom of an Iranian woman. And she talks about very specific things in her life in Iran that she is running away from when she comes to the U.S. What can you talk about those specific things that she had to live with in Iran?
Sure. What I find very interesting about Iran is the difference between kind of the public places and the private sphere in Iran. The current government, as I'm sure you know, is very strict in terms of women and their clothing they have to wear. They have to wear almost like raincoats that cover their wrists. They have to wear headscarves when they're in public. And in many ways, their life is just very limited in terms of the things they can say and the things they can do. Yet in the home, they have freedom, just whatever. It's really based on the family. And so what I find always very interesting is the idea of Iranian women, you know, before they go out every day, they can be wearing jeans, you know, underneath their hijab and underneath their manto, their raincoats, they're wearing jeans and they're wearing fashionable t-shirts and jewelry, and they love to wear makeup. But the second they go out in public, they have to cover all that up and really not stand out. They are supposed to just all kind of not draw attention to themselves. And that's the exact opposite of really what women want to do, I think, no matter where they are.
There's a scene in the book where Tamila is having a birthday party right before her parents give her the visa. And she talks about the guests who are attending the party. Before they leave, they have to wash their makeup off. And it's like a completely different world indoors.
Right,
before
exactly.
They go out on the streets. Another specific part of the book that I think really shows the difference between life in America and life in Iran is when Tamila first comes to Tucson and she sees her sister, and her sister has gotten a boob job. And she doesn't understand that, because why would you do that? The only thing that men can see of you in Iran is your nose. And so is that what you tried to do, is really show the difference for a woman's life in Iran compared to the U.S.?
Yes, I was trying. I mean, it's kind of funny. Nose jobs are the rage that is what women have in Iran. It's probably our equivalent of a boob job. I put that in there because I wanted to show that her sister, you know, had embraced America, and that her belief is that that's what women with money do. You know, they get boob jobs. That's kind of what they do. I also wanted Tammy to be very shocked immediately upon getting off the airplane. I wanted her world to be 100% different, which it is for women coming from Iran. And that was one way to show it. And also to show that, you know, she didn't come here thinking about sex or thinking about love or falling in love. She just came to find a way to stay through an arranged marriage, which she, you know, would be a friendship with a man, and hopefully it would grow into love. But sex was something she never thought about. And so immediately it's clear that her feelings are going to be an issue while she's here.
And it does grow into a very, I mean, it's a love story. Can you talk a little bit about that aspect of the book?
So pretty much the only way, and I think this is unfortunate, that someone could stay in America from a Middle Eastern country without pulling a lot of strings is to be married, to get married. And the deal is her sister is going to try to arrange a marriage for her. within those 3 months, and it would be someone who's, you know, as nice as can be, and they think it has to be someone Persian because Americans just don't get that idea of arranging a marriage. You know, we believe first comes love and then comes marriage. And for her in this situation, it's first comes marriage and hopefully love at some point. So she is meeting a series of men who are eligible bachelors, if they'll have her and if she'll have them. But in the meantime, she creates this world that's all her own. She takes an English as a second language class, and on her way, she passes a coffee shop, Starbucks. And day one, she meets this sweet man named Ike, who is smitten with her, and he really wants to date her and get to know her. And he, of course, has no intention of marriage. She's just a pretty girl from a different place. But over time, they really do come to care for each other. And yet, it's all a secret. She's not allowed to fall in love, so she never tells him about her situation and what she's needing to do in order to stay.
There's different lines in the book that I think are very profound. Right when her father is about to hand her the visa, and she's feeling that that anticipation. And you're right, of Tamila, I felt my hope rising, and this frightened me. For an Iran, hope is seldom fulfilled and nearly always suffocated. It is a dangerous thing for an Iranian girl to allow herself to hope. How did you write that? How did you come up with those words to explain that?
I married, I probably should point mm-hmm. out, so my name's Laura Fitzgerald. I'm Irish-American to the core, freckle-faced and all that. I'm married, though, to a man who is from Iran. He was born in Iran, and he came here when he was 10 years old. So I am familiar to a decent degree with the culture. As I was writing the book, two of his brothers got married to women from Iran who then moved here. And so I was able to see America through their eyes for a time, and it was a great experience. One of them, their sister, who also was visiting, is an artist, and she came here and she just found the freedoms of America tremendous. To be an artist or to be someone of a creative soul in Iran, it's like walking a tightrope. And so to really dream and dream big is almost impossible because you have to dream within this boundary that is given you by the government. That's not to say there aren't women in Iran who are very happy with how things are. The ones who come here, however, are not. They have found that they're unable to live their dreams to the degree they'd like to.
The book is Veil of Roses, available at area bookstores. When we continue, a commentary by Tom Danahy with the Tucson Weekly. This is Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. The Arizona Chamber of Commerce recently announced their support of Senator John Kyle's efforts on immigration. Specifically, they're in support of the guest worker components of the bill, which would allow 200,000 to 400,000 foreign workers to get new U.S. work permits. Glenn Hammer is the president and CEO of the Arizona Chamber of Commerce. He says the bill contains four essential components for a solution to the immigration issue.
Tighten border security, a worker verification system that works, an expanded pool of temporary labor, including high-skilled labor, such as an expansion of the H-1B program, as well as a humane and reasonable way to deal with the 12 million or so undocumented workers who are currently in the country.
Tom Danahy is a columnist with the Tucson Weekly. In a recent opinion, he criticizes the Kyle Kennedy compromise, writing that anyone who supports a guest worker program should look at the beneficiaries.
Well, Memorial Day has come and gone, and I'm shocked. Shocked, I say, to report that the United States Senate did not debate, hammer out, and then pass the comprehensive immigration bill, as Arizona Republican Senator and Chief Bill Becker, John Kyle, had hoped the deliberative body would. The way the storm clouds are gathering, I'd say that it's iffy that anything will be done by the 4th of July, and maybe only 50-50 by Labor Day, what with the traditional all of August vacation factored in. That would make the autumn very interesting, because there's no way this thing will be allowed to seep into an election year, especially one that will essentially be in full gear by this Thanksgiving. The naysayers on all sides, there are certainly more than two sides to this issue, have dug in their heels and all are pretty much heaping scorn on the bill, its origins, and its backers. I will never support the Kyle Kennedy compromise because it includes a provision for a bracero program. Anybody who thinks that the use and misuse of guest workers is a good idea needs to shut up and go back to his job of counting daddy's millions, which were probably made by exploiting cheap labor in the first place. Everybody should be against this abomination, especially labor unions, which are still reeling from bowing down to Bill Clinton's NAFTA nonsense in the 90s, and need to take a stand for the working person before they become the irrelevant organizations that detractors have long been trying to paint them as. Over the past week, I've been asking one of those questions to which I can never get a decent answer. Exactly how many people should be allowed into this country each year? Those on the Minuteman end of the spectrum admit that traditionally, some people should be allowed into the United States each year, but only on a strictly legal basis. Meanwhile, even the most la-la people on the other end, those out setting up lemonade stands on the migrant trail, will begrudgingly agree that in these dangerous times, there must be some accounting of the comings and goings along the border. For me, the frustration comes from the push-me-pull-you nature of the whole mess. I'm an absolutist by nature. I never smoke, never drink, and I eat way too much. We should either close the border or open it all the way. I don't really care which. I'm not afraid of terrorists coming in. They're already here. Neither do I believe that it would be impossible to close a border. Americans can do anything. What we've got to stop doing is leaving the fate of people's lives up to whether they get lucky enough to sign on with the least unscrupulous coyote. We've got to decide whether we are indeed a nation of laws, and if so, start acting accordingly. If there's a law in the books, enforce it. If a majority doesn't want it enforced, take it off the books. Don't be selective. It generates cynicism. Then there's another matter. A few months ago, I met a guy who has been in this country illegally for most of his 24 years. He graduated from high school here, works here, and lives here. But his life raises one of those questions that nobody involved with this immigration bill wants to ask. What if, after all the hoops for people to jump through in order to gain U.S. citizenship have been put in place, people don't want to become citizens? This guy doesn't. He thinks our political system stinks and that our politicians are as crooked as anyone they have back in Mexico. He thinks America is racist and fascist, and that its people have low morals and shifting standards. He's been driving around without a license or insurance for nearly a decade, and he says that even if he were magically granted citizenship tomorrow, he wouldn't change a thing. He thinks that licenses and insurance are just part of a government scam to take his hard-earned money. About the only thing he likes about this place is his hard-earned money that he gets from working construction jobs. That and hanging with his boys, many of whom he claims agree with his views on citizenship. In a way, it makes sense. I know guys who play baseball in Mexico. Not one wants to become a citizen. Likewise for Americans who work in England or Canada. Many people want to remain what they are. Isn't it somewhat presumptuous to believe that everybody wants to become a U.S. citizen? Longtime activist Isabel Garcia views it as an economic problem to which people are attempting to apply political solutions. She asks people to figure out who is benefiting from the status quo. All I know is that those who are making out like bandits now will continue to prosper under a plan that gives them access to hundreds of thousands of permanent underclass braceros. Hey, maybe Kyle didn't sell out his true constituency after all.
Tom Danahy is a columnist with the Tucson Weekly. It's time now for the Arizona Spotlight Arts Calendar. Here's KUAZ's Mark McLemore.
Tonight, there's a benefit called A Night for New Orleans, featuring the Rebirth Jazz Band at the Rialto Theater downtown, beginning around 8 o'clock. You can brush up on your stargazing tonight and tomorrow night from 7 until 10 in the evening in front of the Flandrout Science Center on campus. Venus, Mercury, Jupiter, and Saturn are all expected to make an appearance. The nonprofit group BICUS offers a series of events every weekend, including bike maintenance classes. 628-7950 is the number at BICUS for more information. On stage this weekend, it's your last chance to take in Bell, Book, and Candle, presented by the Live Theater Workshop. They're at 5317 East Speedway. The Gaslight Theater opens a production of Secret Agent Man or Gangsters Away this weekend. at the live theater workshop. That kids play called Jeremy Fry Kicked a Hole in the Sky is at 1 p.m. this Sunday afternoon. And the Borderlands Theater presents a production of Anne Garcia Romero's Earthquake Chica this weekend. Performances are at 7:30 tonight and tomorrow at 2 p.m. on Sunday. For Arizona Spotlight, this is Mark McLemore.
A popular magazine has named Tucson one of the most dog-friendly places in the country. Here's a poem by cowboy poet and humorist Baxter Black. It's about his favorite dog, the Border Collie.
Just a word about one of the greatest genetic creations on the face of this earth, the Border Collie. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall fences in a single bound, the dog that all sheep talk about but never want to meet. The fur that legends are made of makes coyotes cringe. Sheep trip the light fantastic and eagles soar somewhere else. Invested with the energy of a litter of puppies, the work ethic of a boat person and the loyalty of a lassie, they ply their trade on sagebrush flats, grassy fields, and precipitous peaks from sea to shining sea. Away to me, I command. They streak and sail, zipping like pucks on the ice. Black and white hummingbirds in, out, up, down, come, by. Sheep with head up, one eye cocked over their shoulder, asking directions. To the gate, through the race. Mighty dog moves behind the bunch like a towboat pushing barges around the bend. And heart, do they try? Just let me at 'em, Dad. Stay. Come on, I'm ready. Stay. Can't you feel me humming? Listen to my heart. I'm purring like a cat. I am primed. Aim me, point me, pull the trigger. Away to me! It makes me feel like Robin Hood. He leaves my side like an arrow. Working dogs is like manipulating a screwdriver with chopsticks, like doing calligraphy with a plastic whip, like bobbing for apples, like threading a needle with no hands, like playing pool on the kitchen table. There are no straight lines in nature, only arcs, great sweeping curves of sight and thought and voice and dog, always having to lead your command about a dog's length. Sheep bunched like logs in the river. Dogs paddling in the current, always pushing upstream. A ewe breaks loose, then another, another. The log jam breaks. Dogs and sheep tumble about in the white water. Calm again, they start back upstream. Border collies, are they truly smarter than a chimpanzee, cuddlier than a koala, more dedicated than Batman's valet? Can they change course in midair, drag Nell from the tracks, and locate the missing microfilm? Yes, I believe they can. They are the best of the best, the epitome of above and beyond the call of duty. Head dog, Top Gun, I salute you, for man has never had a better friend.
Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio from the University of Arizona and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. A portion of the music heard on today's program was written and performed by Calexico. Audio archives of Arizona Spotlight programs are available online at kuaz.org. Podcasts are also available. I'm Julie Burock.